EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Leadership Podcast is a production of EMSradio.com. You can interact with us via email, emsleadership@gmail.com, or call us 303-720-6001.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast. And now here's your host, Chris Ceballero.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, here we go once again with another exciting EMS Leadership show. I want to thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Chris Ceballero. You know, when we think about mobile integrated healthcare, community paramedicine, there's just so much going on. And I think last week we had a very, very important showing of our career field at the MIH Summit in Washington, D.C. You know, I had the opportunity to be one of the presenters, and, you know, we kind of talked about the program we have at Christian Hospital and how we're kind of making a difference with our patients, how we're making a difference with our volume, and kind of talked about those highlights of how do we go about now trying to get some reimbursement. There was some really great meetings there as well, and hopefully we can start opening the eyes of the lawmakers, start opening the eyes of the, you know, the CMS officials and say, hey, this is really the future of where healthcare is going, and our little career field, not even 50 years old, can really make the difference in how we move forward in bringing healthcare to our nation, our communities, you know, our the citizens that we serve. And it was really, really exciting. So it was a great honor for me to have the opportunity to present. So what we're going to do now is we're going to kind of turn the tables. Rob Lawrence is here with us. Don Lundy is here with us. And I'm going to let Rob kind of take the host chair and kind of give you some of the highlights of MIH, and I'll kind of be the guest. And, you know, I'll ridicule him, and I'll, you know, kind of, I work the soundboard, so I'll make him sound as best as we can. But Rob, I want to thank you for taking the host chair, and I'll turn the mic over to you.
Well, Chris and Don and everybody, good morning. And Chris does indeed control the soundboard. So if I sound right now like Mickey Mouse, it's not me. It's actually Chris twiddling with the controls back in the old country. So let's talk about MIH Summit. And I was a member of the audience at the MIH Summit. It was 5 hours of compact, exciting, inspiring stuff. And there was a stellar cast of leaders and characters. And for me, as a member of the audience, and I'll pick up this in a second, guys, partners. It's a possible first. We had healthcare payers. We had policy leaders. And together, it gave us, for me in the audience, and I think people I was speaking to, a huge amount of hope looking forward now to think that Matt Zavadsky said that we're no longer a unicorn. This is now real, and we're now living it. And I absolutely tweeted that out straight away. So very inspiring day. But Don Lundy, come to you first. As Chris would say, I'm going to steal his line, the resident president. What was your sort of opening impression of the day as we got into it?
Well, I have to set the stage for just 1 minute so everybody understands. Tuesday morning, they had predicted, I believe they used this word more than once, the storm of the century. I think we'd have 7 of those this past winter. But they predicted a ton of snow and things were going to come to a stop and dogs and cats were going to live together. And in fact, starting about 7:30, it started snowing. Even by my Floridian level and people who lived in snow, they said, well, this is a lot of snow. It's heavy snow. It wasn't blocking up the streets, thank goodness, but it certainly was messing up everybody's day. Now, it's snowing. It's a Tuesday. It costs more than $1 to reach this place. Everybody knows Washington is a fairly expensive city to be in, so I was absolutely blown away that we had more than 200 people in the room ready and raring to go to take notes. And I had set the committee kind of up to kind of do this and let them run with it. Always pleased when this group comes up with such a program. And Chris, you're to be congratulated. You're one of the presenters and certainly one of the mindsets that's 10 steps ahead of everybody else, including me. And when we started to listen, I really was taken aback that it's just like a fresh new day. I've heard of MIH, of course. I've lived it the last year as president, listening to all sorts of people talk about it. But here was Chris, who's doing it, and being reimbursed for it, and people who want to reimburse people for it, and physicians. And I noticed two things, and it's something I always note when I go to speak as well. Number one, nobody was clearing their throat or talking to somebody else or breaking the mood. And no one was getting up to go do anything, take a phone call, go to the bathroom. They were listening to everybody, taking notes as fast as they could, getting ready for questions, really engaged in a conversation. And it was one of those moments that you think to yourself, I'm in the room where EMS is going to change. I'm in the room where 20 years from now, when we're all in the rocking chairs and we look back at the medic that responds for us or see an ambulance go by while we're sitting on the porch, or the community paramedic van, actually, is what we'll see go by, that we'll look at each other and say, you know, I was there in the room when it actually changed. I was at that process. So if there's anybody that went to the MIH that didn't feel that way, I check your pulse, because it was a very, very exciting and enlightening time. And I swear that each time I go to something attached to the MIH movement, I think I know about as much as I need to know, and come to find out, I don't know squat. I learn something every time going to that. I get a twinge of excitement. I get a smile on my face, and I think this is what it was like 2 million years ago when we started. It's just that we didn't know which way to go then, and now there's the path, and there's people in rather high authority who want us to do it, and there are people like Chris that are doing it. So I was very invigorated by that entire day.
Excellent. Now, before I turn it over to Chris, it's worth mentioning that our good friend Jamie Davis was there with his camera, and it's probably been in post-production now, but that's going to be screened so everybody can enjoy and learn and take in the atmosphere of that day, Don, at emsworld.com, and I know they're going to stream it eventually, so please look out for that. So your first impressions, Chris, of the day?
You know, one of the things that I was really excited for is, I mean, the challenges that I have with it is, and I tell this to the staff all the time, is I don't know what's happening. I don't know what goes on next. I don't know. I mean, I like to consider myself a progressive EMS leader, but I'm in territory that I've never been before. And I'm having to learn different terminology, and I'm having to learn different nomenclature, and I'm having to learn how different departments of hospitals work. And what I was excited for is that there were other people out there that were getting the scars that I'm getting and that were getting the experiences that I'm getting. And I took away, where I think I'm on a good path of with the program, some of the great work that the other agencies are doing. So I was very excited for that, because as we kind of stumble through, you know, it's like we're in a dark room and we're feeling our way through that. And, you know, sometimes we open a door and we get through, and sometimes we get our hand in some wet that we don't know what the heck it is, and we've got to kind of figure it out while we're wiping it on our shirt. But it was really kind of exciting for me to hear what was going on and give me some validity that maybe I'm doing the right thing. Because as we start to make these changes and as we start to make these implementations, I don't know that they're right. And you know, so now we're putting them in place, we're doing our research, we're putting them in place, and then hopefully we've made those right decisions. So it's a very, very exciting time. It's a very, very scary time, because the decisions that we make today affect our career field tomorrow. That's great responsibility.
I think it's not a case of one size fits all with MIH. It's probably all sizes fit one. And of course, you are, I'd call you second generation, Chris, in terms of, you know, it's no secret that those that started this a year or two, in fact, 4 years ago in some cases, were doing this as a huge loss leader. Doing it as a huge loss leader because they knew that it would come to fruition. And how much have you learned from the trailblazers in terms of what you've learned from them and getting your own program set up?
Yeah, and I think my foundation, of course, comes from the MedStar program. Later 2009, I was part of the MedStar system, working with Matt Zawadzki, and we set the foundation of moving forward with MIH. So I had a really good foundation. Then over the years, in the past 4 years, so that was 2009, in the past 4 years, almost 5 years, I've been able to talk with Matt. I've been able to read his stuff. I've been able to, you know, kind of move forward from there. Now, that's just one program. We talk about what goes on in the Wake system. We talk about what goes on in Eagle County. We talk about what goes on in Ada County and the other great programs that are out there. It really is important because as a hospital-based system, those guys are trying to get into the hospitals and integrate themselves. As a hospital-based system, I've kind of have the inside track to say, okay, guys, use this nomenclature and talk to these people. And it really is that we have to make this successful. And what we're doing is we're really changing the focus of not only our career field, but we're changing the focus of healthcare in the United States. How great would it be? You know, the doc fix was a big thing that happened over the last couple of days of, you know, the doctors are going to get the reimbursement. And of course, our reimbursement was attached to the doc fix as well. Our career field stood to lose about 22% reimbursement in some rural areas. Wouldn't it be great if we can take this mobile integrated concept and change healthcare in the United States, not just our own career field? So, we need to share the information, we need to share the scars, we need to share the experience, but going back to the initial question, Rob, it's very, very important that we keep ourselves right in the mix so we can ensure that we can take best practices and move forward, and then as you tweak those best practices, send them back out to the career field.
Again, I'm going to segue over to Don in a second, but also you mentioned a very important point about language and hospital speak. And of course, one of our other panel members isn't here today. Patrick Pianetza did a fantastic article, which I think went in EMS World Online, that really described all of those key words and phrases and the language that you need to understand when dealing with a hospital. And I commend Patrick for that piece of work. And it's probably very more relevant now than ever was before. Don, now, I mentioned at the start, we had not only leaders from our own industry, our own sector there, we had partners. We had people like Dan Castello, the medical director for the Division of Healthcare of the Joint Commission. I mean, that's a huge win to get these people on side and in the room for us.
I think it is. I'm happy to see how many nurses were there that were taking notes and realizing that this is no surprise to those listening to the show. In some places in the country, nurses and paramedics might see each other as the enemy. And I think this absolutely showed everybody in that room that there were no enemies. We were there for the sick guy, and all of us had missions. And I'll tell you, when you see some of the powerhouses that are there, certainly at the federal government, but some of the groups that were there represented, I realized that a year ago when NEMT kind of laid it down and said, let's do this, and I think I would agree with Chris, not knowing what the heck we were going to do or go, that we're going in the right direction and we're doing the right thing. And it is, you know, I've said it since I started, it's an exciting time to be in EMS, but it really is very exciting and life-changing to see the people who you might have heard from, but in fact now you're meeting and you're shaking hands and they say, tell me more about what you do. I think that's big in the EMS world.
And that was very clear, I think. And we also had, and again, they came up from Fort Worth, which is just a demonstration of how well Matt, Doug, and the team down there have integrated within their local healthcare community. But we had those folk that were the healthcare payers that were actually using the MedStar system in order to help them control their own day. And again, that was very encouraging, not only to see them, but to hear them talk about how we can integrate and really put the integration into mobile integrated healthcare, Chris.
You know, and I think that one of the great things that came from that is the partnership is there. You know, I had the opportunity to meet with the ACO, and, you know, sitting down, I was trying to convince them how much they need us, how much they need us to help deliver that great care. But one of the great lessons that I learned from that meeting, and I was humbled very, very quickly, is they need us as much as we need them. And we need to be able to have those integrations. You know, we had that great presentation by John Peter Smith Hospital and, you know, working with the MedStar system. And they shared with us, and I'm sure we're not speaking out of turn since it was public, that John Peter Smith wrote MedStar a check for $189,000 for the work that they were doing with their, you know, with their patients. And as much as we need them to do this and find a new funding source, they need us as well. So when we talk about, you know, the hospital systems that were there, when we talk about the nurses that were there, when we talk about the regulators that were there, you know, Jayco was there. And even I was very, very surprised when we had our questions and answers. Jayco said that they're probably the best ones to write standards for our MIH project, for what we're going to do as we go forward. Now, I'll tell you, I've worked in the hospital throughout my careers on different things. I was director of cardiopulmonary rehab at one point. I've got some hospital hyperbarics experience running hospital-based systems. Jayco doesn't come to EMS. Jayco doesn't come and look at us. And, you know, all the Jayco inspections we went through when I worked in the EMS side, they come and take a look at our ambulance and say, hey, very nice. And then they go on their way, where everybody else is really up in arms, and hopefully they've dotted the I's and crossed the T's. One of the things that I think is great is now Jayco is saying, let us help you write the standards. Let us help you, you know, certify people in this. I mean, I don't think we're the redheaded stepchildren in the basement anymore.
No, I think, you know, and in the UK, it's been widely known for, as your international correspondent, of course, Chris, that in the UK, the ambulance services are widely known as that great health and social care safety net, because we are the enablers, we're the connectors, we're the people that make the links between the patient, whether in the back of the ambulance, which is where we don't want to go in this particular case, or the patients in the home, putting them in the right pathway. And so having those partnerships, I think, is actually key. In the particular session we were talking about, we got on to the eventual accreditation, and that's really good that we now have the partners that have offered, as Chris said, to help us write those standards. But data, my favorite four-letter word, Don, do we as an industry in this particular discipline of our world have enough information to go forward as one yet?
Well, I think if you talk to enough people around the United States, data is certainly the four-letter word that people are talking about, and we certainly have much more than we did when you and I first started in this business. Do we have enough? I'm not sure we'll ever be at that point. This is such a new direction that EMS is going. I certainly think we have enough to take that first step. I think we have enough data out there that we can prove, for example, that there are holes within the medical system in which we operate, whether that is hospital, EMS, fire, clinics, emergency rooms, and home health. And I'll come back to that in a minute, because I know people are saying, you know, well, this is nothing but home health. Well, okay, maybe not. I might agree with that. But we have enough data to show, first, number one, there are holes in the care that people receive that we can help with. Number two, we can fill that hole both for the patient's advantage and economically to scale, help everybody out in that process. Do we need more data in that corner of the world or in our world? Absolutely. I am someone who believes that we probably have a ton of data out there. Rob, in your words, I think it's how we can compile it and read it that's going to make the difference. And I'm not sure we know exactly how to do that yet. So in the next few years, I think we're going to be scouring over our information that we get off our runs. And we're going to have to ask ourselves, is there a hole we can fill? And there are, and I'll stop there and say, there are people listening today who hopefully haven't turned this off and said, I don't want to know anything about that. They're still kind of hanging on. And they are the naysayers, and they are the ones that say, we're never going to do this. I don't want to do this. You know, everybody in this show feels your pain. I've got it. And this integrated healthcare is nothing to say that emergency medical services responding to 911 calls is ever going to change insofar as us responding to those calls. Having said that, those same people listening say, I wish there was some career ladder. I wish there was some direction we could go in our career that would be more than just humping a stretcher out in the middle of the street. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's staring you straight in the face. It is right there. And although we look at things and say we don't want to do that, we have no idea, and Chris, you brought a good point. None of us have any idea where what great things this is going to do or great places it's going to take us. So as we pull out the data, I hope there's lots of people that pull up their information and say, huh, I didn't know that. That's a good thing when you can pull that up. And I think we'll continue collecting that for some years and learning more about our system than we ever wanted to learn in a good way.
Well, let me pick up on a comment before I again throw it back over to Chris. But putting on my old military hat of yesteryear, of course, the intelligence cycle is the collation and analysis of information to turn it into intelligence. And so where we are at the moment is the collection and the collation phase. I think we're busily analyzing and we're poised for action. I'm going to remain very English, because as Churchill once said also, that this is not the beginning of the end right now, particularly after the summit last week. This is the end of the beginning. And I think I certainly can see, on behalf of everybody else, the road and the light at the end of the tunnel. One of the things we have in Richmond is the great saying that, you know, we have a bucket of money, and we have to keep that bucket of money because we have to pay people, we have to buy new equipment, etc. And I think the door opened and the light came on, and perhaps there is now a way of funding us, but saving billions down track, Chris. And I think that, for me, was a huge takeaway.
Yeah, and I think it was. And you mentioned Churchill, and I'm glad you do that, because that guy makes really great cigars. But anyway, you know, when really? That's all I get? But, you know, as far as the data goes, you know, we learned a lot of... we talked a lot about, is this time to write? Is it time to share that data? And I think it's just so new. I mean, I think that as we start to talk about standards and as we start to talk about those developments, I got to tell you, my feeling is the way that my program looks today is not the way it's going to look a year from now. And I think we're going to kind of revolutionize kind of how we're doing that. As far as the money goes, you know, it's important that we really keep ourselves on track to say, how can we get the best reimbursement possible? Right now, I think what we're trying to do is we're trying just to get enough to get things moving. But even in the processes of the contracts that, you know, we've set up at Christian Hospital, I don't know that that's where that sustainability comes from. I think that just gives us enough of a boost to kind of keep things going and just to kind of see where they're going and the implementation and some more development. But I don't think we really get into full reimbursement, into really what the standards look like and really what the accreditation looks like, until we're probably 3 years down the road. Because as I start to pioneer more, as the MedStar system starts to pioneer more, as more EMS systems start to come online, we learn from each other, and then we're able to, bring this forward. You know, we're in a very, very, you know, we're in a very, very new area of our career field. I mean, we're a career field that's not even 50 years old yet, Rob, and I know you can relate to that. But what we need to start thinking about is, right now, you know, you talk about the white paper and it really set forth our career field, but right now, us as leaders and us as providers and us as pioneers, we're writing what the next 50 years are going to look like. And we have to be very, very careful that we don't rush that process. Because when we think about what the white paper did, and then we had some funding, and then the funding went away, and then it was fend for yourself, that wasn't the best model for our career field. That's why we weren't taken seriously. That's why we weren't respected by our hospital peers. That's why. And what we have to do now is, on a solid foundation, we've got to grow this house that sustains for the next 50 years.
I think that's those are exceptionally wise words. And back to you, Don. I don't want to get too much into EMS on the Hill, but I got a sense that all of the things that we talked about in the MIH summit have a real and true relevance now in the emerging legislation and the way that we can assist the nation.
Absolutely. And again, I won't go much into EMS on the Hill either. We're going to do a separate show on that. I think everybody's going to enjoy that show. But I will say one thing about it, and it doesn't have to do with EMS on the Hill, but it has to do with who we talk to that day. Everybody has to understand that in the culture of Congress and the Senate, in the buildings that we roam through all day speaking to people, the word healthcare, if it is not spoken on an hourly basis, then you're in the wrong building. You're in a restaurant. You're not in the decision-making buildings of Congress. And when they talked about, when they say that word healthcare, the word organization or savings goes along with it. Now, there are clinicians listening to this show. I've met them. Thank you very much for listening. And I know sometimes you look and say, I understand about the revenue side, but I'm not that interested in it. I think for most people that listen to this show, that's not the case, because they understand that every 2 weeks something goes in your bank, and that's because the leaders of your organization make sure that that revenue stream is there, and this is all part of it. So imagine being in a building filled with decision makers who say the word healthcare every hour, and they say, I wonder who can help us. And for not only one day, all year long, this pesky, I'll use Lisa's term, squeaky wheel paramedic calls me every 3 weeks and says, hey, how about the field bill? Hey, how about Medicare reform? And instead of being a pain, most will look at you and say, well, thank goodness somebody that does this is talking about it. So I think everybody in Washington is in a turmoil about what to do about healthcare, and they're looking for people that are actually doing it to say, I've got this idea that looks a little strange, walk with me, and they're more than willing to walk with you and listen to those issues.
Well, my response to that, I think, and this is for you, Chris, and you only, that never in the face of EMS history has so much been owed by so many to so few.
Yeah, it's a very, very good comment to make, Rob. And you know, when we think about the reason that we got into our business, and you know, I know we all got into this so we can get rich, and you know, we're gonna retire soon with mansions and cars, and you know, kind of along the same lines as those sport figures that we look up to. But you know, we got into this business because we thought we could make a difference. We got into this business so we could be on the front lines of healthcare. We got into this business because we're the first line of defense in ensuring that when those folks that rely on us have the worst day of their lives, that we can make a difference. And that's really what we're doing now. It seemed that in the past, we allowed ourselves to be guided. We allowed ourselves to be led. And, you know, when we think about some of the things that we talk about now, and let's just even move away from MIH, you know, let's talk about capnography. Let's talk about hypothermia therapy. Let's talk about, this is really where the tail is starting to wag the dog when it comes to, you know, our integration. So it seems like the most appropriate time that as now we're bringing forward best practices in healthcare, as we're bringing forward concepts of what the future of mobile integrated healthcare look like, we're actually legitimizing what we're doing in our career field. And we are, I mean, the few are really starting now to set the foundations for the rest of, as we move, the rest of our career field as we move forward. And it's a very exciting time, but it's a very, very slippery slope. And it's a very, very, it's a very, very cautious time as well. But, you know, I'm just glad to be part of it.
So it's been an excellent first half of the show so far. And we've talked about what happened in the room. Let's expand outside a little bit now for those that are listening, those that are thinking, well, how the hell do I take that first step on what inevitably could be a great journey? So, Don, how do we prepare, if we're outside listening to this, to go forward from now?
One of the best things I think any organization can do is become intimately aware of the leaderships of the hospitals and your other partners in the community. I bet there are some organizations out there that have tremendous friendships and tremendous business relationships with their hospitals. And my bet is there are some organizations that do not. I don't think you have that choice anymore. They are part of the solution and they are part of the team just as we are. It's important that you get to know them, you get to know the leaders, you get to know the not only the nurses in the ERs and the doctors in the ERs, but some of the administrative staff, some of the financial staff. And it would be good right now to go to a meeting of just, and if it were me, it would either be the CEO or one of his number two people, and sit with them and say, so tell me, how do you think we can help your bottom line? Tell me some of the issues that are out there. And while he rolls his eyes, he or she rolls their eyes and says, well, gosh, there's so many things. Plant a seed and say, well, here's an idea. This is a crazy cocktail napkin. Maybe you don't want to speak of it outside this building idea for a minute, but let me ride it with you and talk about integrated healthcare. and have some plan to at least get in that door. But before you start talking about that, you need to know the partners in the room. You need to not only be upfront with the hospital folks, you need to be with the nursing homes in your area. You need to be with the visiting nurses and the home health care folks in your area. You certainly need to know the political players in the room. A lot of us in leadership positions are kind of shielded from the political side, and I understand that, but that doesn't mean you can't at least have that recommendation that you're standing next to the mayor and you shake his hand and say, great job you've done, let me know if you need any help. To stop this idea that this EMS corner is my corner, it's not your corner, it's just my corner. You're going to die in the vine if you do that, and it's got to be a partnership that's everybody out there. Is that hard? In some places, it's easier than not. In some places, it's really hard. Do you need to take the 15 gallons of pride you have and put it in the trunk? Okay, maybe you do. But we're not talking about our organization or our personnel. Chris put it exactly out there. We're talking about the next 50 years. We owe it to the people before us and the people who started this to continue this conversation and to make it better. And if that means that there's a different ladder to climb, an MIH ladder to climb, then so be it. And we've got to prepare our organization to do that. And I think the partnerships that we make with the hospitals, with the nursing homes, with the nurses' organizations, with the home health care will pay off in droves, and mental health organizations. We already take care of their patients. The problem is we're restricting ourselves to putting them on a bed and carrying them to an emergency room. Anybody who looks at modern healthcare knows that that's going to stop. That has to stop. We need to be the leader to not stop it so much as to redirect it. As I said before, these are our patients. We need to make sure they get the right care, and we need to be at the front of the line as to lead how we're going to get that right care.
Let me jump back in there then, Don, because my next question is sponsored by the letter P. You mentioned the word partnerships. Now, before we get to the discussion we have, we need to do a bit of prior preparation and planning. And Chris, you're in a hospital-based system. So if I'm coming to see your hospital CEO, what documents, what research, what preparation do I need to do? And more importantly, where can I go to find out these answers and this bit of research?
You know, I really like this question, and I'm going to take a little bit of time here to kind of take you in a different direction, because we've been hearing for a long time that we need to talk with the CFOs, we need to talk to the CEOs, and certainly that's what I was doing. And I want to change focus a little bit. Let's not talk to the CEOs and let's not talk to the CFOs yet. What we need to do is we need to find out the guys who are in charge of process improvement. Because even though the CFOs and the CEOs are making the final decisions, anytime you bring them anything, and I've done this on a couple of things, not just with MIH, they'll always say, well, go talk to Steve and find out what the data is. Well, what does Steve say about that? What does Steve think about this concept? And I was really kind of barking up the wrong tree for a little bit. Even though they listen to the concept and they kind of nod their head and they smile, they're not going to make a decision until Rob's four-letter word is looked at, and that's the data. So let me give you a little bit of my education. So I was planning to sit down and chat with the ACO. So as I was preparing, I went to the process improvement director and I said, I'm getting ready to meet with this the ACO. These people are going to be in the room. I need to know about this. And he said to me, no, you don't. I said, well, what do you mean I don't? He goes, you're looking at this all wrong. I've been hearing you talk about high-risk readmissions. I've been hearing you talk about frequent flyers. I've been hearing, and you're missing the mark. So he went down and he schooled me on something that the hospital needed and not necessarily what we needed to do or what we thought we needed to do for the hospital. So as I start to look at and I say high-risk readmissions, he says, stay away from high-risk readmissions and look at the length of stay. Now, you're going to hear this first right here. I talked about this on the MIH Summit, and I'm going to tell you right now the length of stay. And basically what that means is in my facility, our hospital is over 65% of the time in the length of stay. Hospitals only get a certain amount of money. If you go in with CHF and you stay there for 15 days, you're only going to get X amount of money. If you stay there for 3 days, you're only going to get the same X amount of money. So if folks are feeling better and they're gone in a five-day period, maybe you're going to get a little bit of that reimbursement that you can put in your pocket. But if you go over the national average length of stay, you're not making any money. So my facility, we go over 0.65 days, a little bit more than half a day, in length of stay. But that costs our facility $4.4 million a year. So now, as we go forward, and as we look at the length of stay, you know as well as I do, there's a doctor who's saying, this patient's green, they can go home today. Or they're looking at the other spectrum and they're saying, this guy's red, he needs to stay another day. But what about the guy who's yellow? What about that guy in the middle? I'd send him home today, but if I had a good support structure, I don't know if he's going to be able to take his medicine. I don't know if he's going to be able to get what he needs. I don't know if he's going to be able to take care of himself. That's where we can step in. And we can say, on this day, let's send that person home. Let's manage them at home. Let's call the doctor and give EKGs. Let's give vital signs. Let's give the history. If we need to, we hook up our iPads. We hook up our iPhones. We hook up Skype. We can make that connection with the doctor and the patient where they can look at them. But now what you're doing is when you decrease the length of stay, you have the ability to deal with a Medicare traditionalist. These people who are sick, these people who are, you know, older in age, are the folks that now we're dealing with. And these are your high-risk readmissions. So rather than keeping the high-risk readmissions out as a goal, you're keeping the length of stay down for that facility. They're able to put more money in their pocket and then have a cost share with you. Then you're working with the high-risk readmissions to say, we're not going to allow them to remit in a 30-day period. So with handling length of stay, you're managing the high-risk readmissions. The hospitals are putting more money in their pocket, and there's more money for you to share. I want to go on with length of stay. So we have about 19,000 admissions or discharges in our facility a year. 65% of those discharged stay too long. Well, that's 9,100 patients. So at $400, think about $400 a day, 9,100 patients, that's where we get our $4.4 million from. So if we're able just to take a third of those patients, remember I said green patient can go home, red patient has to stay, yellow patient, I don't know. So if we take a third of that money, we're saving that facility $1.2 million. Or whatever that number is, you guys can do the math. But here's something that's even more that affects my facility, is that 70% of the patients who leave, who are in our coverage area that have insurance, leave our area to go to another hospital for inpatient services. So we have a patient migration. They wave as they drive past our hospital as they go to another facility. And the reason for that is we don't offer private rooms. So the process improvement guy, his name is Steve Cosley, really great guy. He says, for us to guarantee that everyone gets a private room 95% of the time, we need 31 more beds at a cost of $1 million a bed. That's $31 million. And I got to tell you, my hospital loses $30 million a year. And if it wasn't for the other hospitals and the hospital systems, we wouldn't stay afloat and we would have to close our doors. So they're not going to come up with $31 million so they can get some of that business. But us, as mobile integrated healthcare providers, as community paramedics, if we manage the 65%, it opens up 25 beds a day. And now we're able to get some of those patients in that have that insurance because we can guarantee them 90% of the time they're going to get a private room. So now, as to go back to your initial question, Rob, is what do you need to have and what documents you need to have? The first off you need to do is you need to know what the needs assessment is for the community. It's not what you think they need, but you have to do your due diligence to figure out what is it that the community needs. Because what the community needs, the hospitals are figuring out. If you have it in at the hospital or if the hospital has a foundation, they've done a needs assessment. Get that needs assessment. Know where their loss is. Know where you can help them and sit down with that process improvement guy and say, this is what we can offer. How can we help? And I think that's a really great start.
That is an excellent answer, Chris. And I'm immediately and probably going to tweet most of that out because I think that's very important. Where we've gone on the show is we've gone from the what it is to how it went. We're now into the how we do it. And as I said, it was sponsored by the letter P there because prior preparation and planning promotes process improvement and partnerships. Now, Don, that was a very focused view from Chris, let's take it right back out again to, in your own words, the alphabet soup of national associations and organizations. How can they all help us and contribute towards this?
Well, the challenge of every national organization, I think, is to try to get like minds together to see what their members want. And of course, every membership organization has a different focus. But in general, I think every member organization, their members want a culture in which they can help the patient more. Now, whether that's clinical needs, whether it's financial needs, whether it's mobile integrated healthcare, they want to be able to help the patient better and more. I think from a national organization, NEMT's really gone to great lengths to listen to our membership. And that's not listening to one member or 10 members, to listen to the diversity of memberships that we have. You know, as everybody knows, NEMT represents everybody who wears a hat in EMS. And when you listen to that many ideas, there are some definite focuses the memberships would like to have. They certainly want some kind of focused organization in Washington, and Wednesday we'll talk about the EMS in the Hill and how we're helping to do that. I think they'd like a national organization to look at the future and not only tell you what it might look like, but give you some ideas how to do it. The MIH movement, NEMT's out in the front of that. I call them the A players, and Chris is one of them. All the A players that have got it going on, and they're doing it. We have them with us, and they with us, and us with them. And you know, we are trying to work out that map and what it's going to look like. And if it looks like we're writing the map as we tell you about it, we are, because it is. It's an exciting time to be in EMS, and we, as national organizations, we need to ask our membership, what do you feel is the next step? And there might be some memberships out there that will say, we're fine where we're at. We just want to sit here, wait for the bell to ring, and go on the call. Okay. As a membership organization, that's what your membership wants, and you push forward. My bet is there's not many memberships like that that are going to say they want to continue to be in the forefront. So national organizations need to prepare themselves for the, I call it the onslaught, for the onslaught of questions and the onslaught of members wanting to know what's the next step. And most importantly, I think, I'll speak for NEMT and not for any other group. For a long time, organizations, especially in EMS, like to plan themselves to death before they make a move. And I've got to tell you, this culture that we're in right now, some national organizations are going to have to step out where it's very uncomfortable, because the plan can't be worked out that much because the train has left the station. So if you're trying a new process and you want to get it done and you want to move out, but you say, I just need to plan a little bit more, sometimes you're going to step out somewhere that's a little bit uncomfortable. And if you step out and you're uncomfortable, you're probably right where you need to be.
And Rob, I want to add to that as well. As a member of the Board of Directors of NEMT, as a member of the Board of Directors of National EMS Management Association, I have to tell you that I'm prideful of my organizations. And NEMT is really taking the lead in mobile integrated healthcare. And, you know, Don, as Board of Directors and as the President of NEMT, we've truly set a focus and to dedicate as many resources as we can, to speak to as many people as we can, and to truly make a difference. Now, I don't know that any EMT has the sole responsibility of doing this. And I want to touch on that. I'm glad that they're doing it, but we need your help. You know, lobbyists cost money. Going to meetings cost money. And NEMT has said from the very beginning, we're in this for the long haul and we're going to support it. Well, we need your support to help support it. So if you're not a member of the national organizations, this is the time to become members of the national organizations. If you're into the change, we need your support to make this happen. As you listen to the things that Christian Hospital EMS is doing for mobile integrated healthcare, and MedStar is doing for MIH, and Eagle County is doing for MIH, as we go out and meet these people, and as we go out and make these trips, and as we go out and write these documents, This costs money. And if you're interested in where the career field is going, and hopefully we're going to get reimbursement, we need your support. You know, but we've talked about NEMT and we've talked about becoming members on this show for a long time, but the talking has to stop. And now if you're out there and you're waiting for the future of what the future is going to look like for the career field and where the reimbursement is going to come from, we need your support. Because, you know, the money doesn't grow on trees. And as we go forward, we need your support. But, and with that, you become part of a great organization. There's a lot of great benefits that come with membership. And now you have a stake in what the future of our career field looks like.
And I would have to back up with Chris that I know what it's like to be, you know, there's many people out in this field that have never done this. I think the three people that are on the show today certainly know what it's like to be out there in the field. And I understand what it is to make a living, to make sure things get done. I also know that I'll speak for me, if there's a Starbucks within 10 feet of me, I'll probably stand in line if it's before noon and get a $6.50 coffee. Certainly, membership in a national organization that is now representing men and women all over the United States is worth a couple of Starbucks coffees.
Well, just to declare my own hand, my organization is part of the Coalition of Advanced EMS Systems, which includes some household names such as Reno, MedStar, our friends in Niagara, all doing mobile integrated healthcare, and we're with you too. I like your comment, Chris, and clearly a little less conversation and a little more action is now called. But just for a second, of course, if you were to look at tweets, social media feeds, etc., mobile integrated healthcare, community paramedicine is trending right now, and it's up there. But what do we say to the guys that are still doing the 911 service, the ambulance response, that haven't got into this yet? What's your message to them right now?
You know, I think that's the core component of what we do. Right now, as we still get fee-for-service, right now, as we are charged with taking care of our communities, that's the very, very big focus. The mobile integrated healthcare piece is the brass ring. The mobile integrated healthcare piece is where we move to. We never get out of the ambulance business. What we need to do, and Chris Montero said this, and I've coined this throughout my, you know, time of talking about it, that we want to change our focus from emergency medical services to being part of community health. Oh, and by the way, sometimes we have to do ambulance calls. And right now, if you're not getting involved because of funding, if you're not getting involved because of you're waiting to see what's happening with the flow, that's still the EMS side is the big core of what we do. Watch the organizations who are developing. Watch where the flow of money comes from. I'll tell you, a lot of people are saying, Rob, they're saying, where does the money come from? And we just don't have the money. And we just don't have the staff. Start with those super users that you have in your system. You know, when I looked at the super users that I had in my system, we identified 22 people that have hit us for over 1,200 trips in a year. Well, that's cost us, you know, if you think about, you know, 1,200 trips at $400 a pop, that's a number. I mean, that number comes out. If I can help my organization save half that number, then that's half of that money that they've saved. That's half of that loss. If you don't have the staff to do it, think about putting them into the field during those non-peak times. Identify the frequent flyers. Identify the people who are using the system for other than emergency care. And get your ambulances into the community during non-peak times. Let them work with those super users. Get them the resources that they need. Oh, by the way, if the balloon goes up and they need to take a call, excuse yourself and say, I got to go run this emergency call. I'll be right back with you in a little bit. And at least start that process rolling. But watch what's going on in the career field. Read what's going on in the career field. Listen to the shows and plan how you're going to move forward.
And you sailed straight into my trap, Chris, and well done, because the point being is that if you're just doing, and I don't mean this in a derogatory sense, but regular 911 response, and you're doing things like looking at your frequent service users, your loyalty programs, as Matt Zavadsky would say, if you're having case conferences with your local authority over a particular patient, you're already doing this. And we call it in Richmond paramedics in the community, because that's our name for it. But when we get out and do these things, so whether you know it or not, we're doing it to a larger or a lesser extent, and I think that's an interesting point as well. We're nearly on time, Chris, and I'm going to throw it over to Don for a few final thoughts, Don.
I think if you were there in the room with us in D.C., I think you feel the excitement coming back, and you don't know what to do first. You want to do 10 things at first, and that's a good place to be. If you weren't, and I know there are people that just couldn't for a variety of reasons, you got to pay the bills, you have kids to pick up, you have things to do, I understand, I truly understand, and I wish you could have been there, but that's not the end of it. You need to pick up your equipment, and you need to say, I need to take the next step, let's take the next step. And in the good words of a very good friend of mine who's no longer with me, okay, what's next? That really is what we need to keep focused on as we go further and further into the next generation of EMS. Like you said, Rob, 911's going to be here, and if you like doing that, that is awesome. When you get to be my age, which is between 2,000 and 1,000 years old, you know, doing that, it's kind of hard. It's a little bit harder. I'm not getting older, but I'm getting more mature. If you're interested in developing the career field for EMS, if you, as you said, Chris, if you say, boy, those loyalty pictures, I sure wish we could do something about it. This is what we can do about it. You need to ask yourself, okay, what's next? I think it's going to be an exciting time to be in EMS.
Thank you. I'm going to quote something I said earlier on in the show that this isn't the beginning of the end. This is merely the end of the beginning. It's been a real pleasure being your host today, and I'm going to throw it back to you, Chris, to finish up and close off.
You know, Rob, I think that I have to start to worry now. I mean, you did a great job, and I'm going to go ahead and put you in my succession plan for when it comes time for me to move on as host of EMS Leadership. Maybe I need to start grooming you to be the future host. I think you did an excellent job. You know, when we think about mobile integrated healthcare, this is truly an exciting time in our career field, and everybody out there has the opportunity to pioneer and become part of what the future of our career field looks like. And, you know, I applaud an EMT for taking the charge. I applaud EMS World for their support and putting the Mobile Integrated Healthcare Summit on. And they're constantly putting these on at the conferences and in conjunction with EMS on the Hill Day. And I'm sure we're going to see something to this component in I'm sure we're going to see something to this component in Nashville. So keep it up. Read, study, investigate, listen, and you too will have the opportunity to deliver the greatest healthcare that we can and set the future of our career field. For Don Lundy and Rob Lawrence, I'm Chris Sabalero. Join us next week where we're going to talk about EMS on the Hill Day. It was really a great time. We had great opportunities to talk with lawmakers, and now they're starting to understand. After 5 years of being on the Hill, they're starting to understand EMS. So join us for that show. I don't think you'll be disappointed. Until next week, everybody have a great week.